entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Ameritech Property Management, how can I help you?
Yeah, I've got two dogs crapping on my lawn. One of them is as big as a house.
Ameritech Property Management.
Okay, so my house smells like something out of a horror movie. It's like something died.
You guys sent me a violation notice in the mail. It says my lawn is unsightly. What the hell is that?
If you guys think that you're going to take my house, you got another thing coming. You're going to put a lien on my house for $20?
That's right. Everything you ever wanted to know about condominium living or deed-restricted communities. Good afternoon and welcome to the Ameritech Connection radio talk show on the TAN Talk Radio Network. Do you live in a condo or deed-restricted community? Do you have issues concerning the do's and the don'ts in your community? Have you been getting into trouble with your community association or management company? Got questions but just can't get the answers? Well, we cover it all and much more right here and right now on the Ameritech Connection. Hi, I'm Mike Perez, the CEO of Ameritech Property Management and your host for the Ameritech Connection. And sitting right next to me is my co-host, the beautiful and talented Miss Sharon Van Winkle. Sharon is also the Director of Marketing for Ameritech Property Management and has over 10 years of experience dealing with these, at times, very difficult situations. So with that in mind and without further ado, here's Sharon.
Thanks, Mike. We have an exciting one-hour show for you here today, so please keep listening and call us with your questions because we have all the answers. The local number is 727-441-3000. That is 727-441-3000. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-866-826-1340. Again, that's 1-866-826-1340. Did you know that Ameritech Property Management manages over 25,000 homes in the Tampa Bay area? And that means we have a lot of experience dealing with a lot of different issues. We've been managing condominium and deed-restricted communities for over 20 years, and now we've decided to host our own radio talk show to discuss and educate you, our listeners, on the do's and the don'ts regarding community living. Oh yeah, not to mention the crazy and off-the-wall stories you're hear only on the Ameritech Connection radio talk show.
Okay, folks, today we have a very special guest, and we're going to talk about how much authority does your condo or homeowners association really have? And can your association force you to replace, let's say, your mailbox? How about paint your house, maybe cut your grass, or even go as far as telling you what type of vehicle you can park in your own driveway? And if you don't, our guest today is going to tell you what a board of directors can do to you. It's all about enforcing deed restrictions. That and much more right here and right now on the Ameritech Connection.
Thanks, Mike. Today our guest is Dan Greenberg. He's a partner with the law firm of Cianfrone, Nikoloff, Grant, and Greenberg. And Dan specializes in representing community associations on a wide range of matters. He has exceptional experience when it comes to dispute resolution with community associations, and he's very successful with handling mediation and arbitration matters. He also represents communities on collections and general counsel matters. And what I like about him is that he promotes an active approach by the board of directors in developing and consistently applying collection policies aimed at keeping associations financially sound and free of litigation. And we at Ameritech use this law firm extensively, and we always find them knowledgeable and professional attorneys. So welcome, Dan. We're happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Sharon, for that highly complimentary introduction. It is always a pleasure to work with you guys and your team and to be here today, so hopefully people will learn something.
Well, welcome, Dan. And by the way, you are one of my favorite attorneys down here, but don't tell anybody, okay?
Well, I don't think anyone's listening, so
no,
I think our secret is safe.
Don't worry about that. No. All right, let's just start off, Dan. How much authority does an association board of directors really have?
Yeah, well, I mean, they do have authority to enforce the documents. That is one of their primary functions. So we oftentimes don't agree with what is in those documents. We may not like the rules, but the board absolutely has the authority to enforce them, and the local courts will back them up.
So everything that's in the deed restrictions, they can literally enforce, sue, just go forward with whatever they feel is not in compliance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I counsel my clients all the time on making sure that they have in their documents what really accurately represents what the association wants to be enforcing. You have to remember that these communities inherit a set of documents that are canned and delivered by the developer.
Some of them are really, really old.
Yeah, too. Exactly.
They're very old. I mean, we've got communities that we work on together that are 35, 40 years old. They've got others that, you know, the developer kind of blows through. They give you what they've churned out for dozens of other communities around the state. So it doesn't necessarily reflect what the community wants. But if you don't amend your own documents to give yourself the types of restrictions and rules that actually suit the community, you're going to have a lot of upset individuals right. when the board starts enforcing these archaic rules.
Right. And they have to be amended through and with an attorney such as yourself.
Yes, correct. And that's part of the problem that the board has, is they only have so much authority to do things on uh-huh. their own. They're really bound by the four corners of that document.
Now, some boards think that because they have obsolete things in their documents that they must get them out. I mean, give us a little history on how that really works. I mean, because I don't think that's necessary, right?
Yeah, I mean, with rules, I would say we're in a different ballgame, because in theory, any owner could take your deed restrictions down to the courthouse and start enforcing, even if the board doesn't. So it's really not sufficient to say, we don't like this restriction anymore. It doesn't really suit our community. Because if one person, literally one in the community, thinks that's a good rule, they have every right to go and enforce that rule. Because what a judge will tell you is, if you don't like it, go through the amendment process and get it out of your documents.
Right.
All right, that makes sense.
But like some obsolete stuff that, you know, stuff that just is really unenforceable because, you know, Florida statutes has changed certain things,
sure.
you know, where they can't just enforce it, but boards seem to think that they have to get that out of the documents.
Because yeah, I agree with you. You don't have to take that stuff out. The stuff that gets rendered obsolete because the statute changes, we are going to then revert to the statute, and that the documents in the statute sort of work in harmony with each other if you know how to interpret one or the other. Sometimes they'll set a floor, sometimes they'll set a ceiling, but your deed restrictions can't conflict with Florida statute.
Right.
The statute will kind of set a range for the things that you can do, and you've got to operate within the range set forth by the statute.
All right. So if you're talking about something simple like the texture or your fence is made up. So in the old days, you know, wood fence, nothing more than that. Now they've got so much, you know, nicer materials, something that looks nicer, mm-hmm. is long lasting. Is that something that the board can just amend on their own?
That's one of the big problems. So when a community is formed back in 1983 and everyone's using shadow box fences, and that's right. written into the deed restrictions, now we want beautiful wrought iron fences, we want PVC fences, we've had all these innovations. Well, the board is bound to those old deed restrictions, because if the document says in black and white, you're only going to use shadow box fencing in this community, it doesn't matter that the community wants to use this other type of fencing. Until you go take that restriction out or replace it with something else, they have no right to do so.
Interesting.
Okay.
Hey, give us an example of one of the craziest things maybe a board wanted you to enforce as their lawyer.
You've got a big smile on your face. This is going to be good.
To enforce. I'll tell you, since we're talking about fences and these archaic mm-hmm. ARC guidelines, to that point exactly, we have had guys who've come into communities that are forward-thinking, that have a lot of money to spend on their property, and they want to beautify their lot, thereby increasing mm-hmm. the property value, which, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're here for.
Of course.
We want to keep your community right. looking good. We want to enforce the rules, and we want property values to go up.
Right.
So it's boards that are enforcing and not even bothering to try to change these types of restrictions that bind an owner to use these old, antiquated, mm-hmm. outdated improvements that they have denied beautiful proposed architectural changes. And that's where I counsel a board. You've got to use some reason in this. If the documents say X and we all want Z, you've got to go change the documents.
Yeah, but a lot of times, Dan, I think you would agree with me that it's really hard to get the membership to even open up the mail, much less vote. So, you know, the participation is a real critical factor. And, you know, and some of the documents even say that it takes, 90%.
Yep.
To make it happen, so they're stuck with shadow box fences, or otherwise they just ignore it?
Well, that gets us into a problem with Apathy affects every community in our area. You know it. I know it. We fight against it every day when we try to get owners to participate because the board cannot do everything on their own. And that's an important part of this discussion today. The board has a limited power. They have the power to enforce the documents, but when they want to change the documents, they need to go back to the people, which is why everyone listening to this show needs to actually maybe attend a board meeting once in a while.
Right,
and
absolutely.
Certainly open your mail. I mean, when the association decides it's important enough to send you something in the mail, please open it. Oftentimes, we need your help to bring us into the modern age. So if we don't enforce what we have in the documents, we run the risk of, number one, maybe never being able to force it. And if it's something that is important, we don't want to lose that right. Because enforcement is supposed to be consistent. It's supposed to be even-handed. And it's supposed to be timely. And when a board falls down in its duty in doing that, the ramifications are tangible. I mean, there is a negative downside to not properly enforcing your documents.
So just to go back to the shadow box fence, okay, let's say they can't get the membership to vote it in, all right? And they decide that they're going to go with PVC and nice fences, you know, and just say, well, you know, the membership won't vote it in, so, you know, we're just going to do it anyways. Okay, what's the ramifications on that?
All right, so worst case scenario is you let these people make these changes. In a worst case scenario, a court could make someone rip out a modification that doesn't comply with the standards if this one person complains. Practically speaking, you know, what we want to mainly avoid is the board selectively enforcing who they're going against.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, they let these folks do, the people that they like, you know, they let them make certain modifications, whereas they go and enforce against others. You know, that's when a court's going to step in and say, no, you're out of bounds. But if they have a restriction in there that, you know, they don't want to enforce, they've never enforced, and they haven't done it for years, at that point, the people that have violated are going to be safe. They're going to be grandfathered because the board kind of told them implicitly by their lack of action, you're okay. But when it becomes an issue that the masses start understanding that this is going on and they say, wait a second, we don't like this anymore, that's when the board will have to take action to start enforcing from that point. They can always cure their lack of action in the past by making a resolution and moving forward. But at the point where they've gone years without enforcing, they're not going to be able to turn around to those folks that have done it.
Right, right. Okay. Back to the example of the crazy thing the board wanted you to enforce as their lawyer.
Well, I can tell you that
we want to hear. Come on, yes, spill the beans.
Okay, I can tell you that the craziest enforcement story that we ever have was in a condo, and we had a renter who was using the unit as a brothel. So she's letting guys in and out of the building at all hours. There are Johns passed out in the hallways. We've got picture proof.
You got the language down there, too, I hear.
This is from the case, of course, and the research that we did after the fact.
Did you have to physically go down there and check it out yourself? Or
no, fortunately, my partner had to handle that particular case.
Who's that, Steve?
I can't speak for what Steve did as far as his research into this particular case, but, you know, at the end of the day, we had to kick this lady out of the unit because it literally was getting unsafe with junkies and you know, like these Johns coming to the property and little old ladies reporting strangers passed out in the hallways. The way we got her, by the way, is she was advertising on, you know, Craigslist and
yeah, really.
So we walked into the courthouse with our pictures of the guys passed out and her advertisements with the condo unit on there. So people will go to no ends to.
So what they do? Give her a cease and desist, and
that judge threw her right out. We got an injunction. Sheriff comes and enforces the eviction. Wow. And that was the end of that.
That's a good one. I like that. All right, I heard of a case where someone went to jail for not cutting the grass. So are you kidding me? Can that happen?
All right. Well, yes. And the process in a nutshell is, you know, we try to be reasonable on the front end. You know, when we're talking about enforcement, from us, you know, sitting here, we're detached, we're a third party, we're a vendor that the association uses to help to try to get compliance. But these folks are neighbors, and we understand that. So there has to be some reasonableness factored into any kind of enforcement policy.
Yeah,
that you give them one or two friendly letters, give them a chance to comply. Sometimes someone's going through a rough patch. You know, sometimes they just need a little bit of a nudge. But at the point where we've tried our best to be nice, And then it goes to legal enforcement. Well, when I get involved, I mean, that's litigation. So I have every right by law to enforce these documents through the courts, or if it's a condo, through arbitration. At the point that we get a court order and a judge has gotten involved and said, mow your lawn, if the person now does not comply with the judge's order, they are in contempt of court. Mm-hmm. And the judge can issue a warrant for the sheriff to mm-hmm. pick them up and throw them in jail for 3 days. And can you imagine going to jail for not mowing your lawn?
No.
So really, it's a contempt issue.
It's a contempt issue.
Right. At that point, yes.
Yeah, our remedies, of course, is to get the relief that we seek. Mm-hmm. We get the lawn mowed. But if the person absolutely won't do it, the court can hold them in contempt right. of his or... And judges do not like being defied. I can tell you that.
Well, trust me, I believe that. I mean, judges are there for a reason.
Yes, right? Mike, I'm sure you've had a lot of experience with judges. I believe that.
All right, Dan, that was good. Hey, what's the difference between rules and regulations versus the declaration?
All right. The declaration's like our big contract. You know, it's the document that there is really no wiggle room around. It's what the owner agrees. They don't sign anything, okay? But this is recorded in the public record. They're on knowledge that this exists. So the owner signs a contract essentially with the association saying, these are the things that I knowingly agree to. I also agree to the fact that they could be changed throughout the years. When we want to tell someone what they can do with their property, typically we're going to the declaration. The rules and regulations don't have to be voted on by the owners. That's something that the board can do on its own. Now, in a condo, typically you're going to have rules and regulations that relate to the common elements. So the pool, parking, clubhouse, tennis court, facilities, etc. In an HOA, our rules are more limited in scope unless there's a provision in that declaration that gives the board the authority to make rules that relate to the lot. That is a very specific provision that has to be in the deed restrictions. Otherwise, the board just can't say no pets in this community,
well, right.
no leasing in yeah. this community, right. no commercial vehicles and all the hot button issues. That has to be in the deck.
Well, the rules and regulations in essence are, for example, they can establish pool hours.
Right.
They can establish when the clubhouse is going to be open and when it's going to be closed. But in the declaration where there's pet restrictions or... any other restrictions related to the use of the property, mm-hmm. that has to be amended by the membership, because a board does not have the authority, to, from what you're telling me, to just have a board meeting and say, oh, there's, we're going to allow pets or there's going to be no pets going forward.
That's correct. Okay. So I would say, you know, a reasonable use of reason of rules and regulations would be an extension of what is already in the declaration. So if we have a no pet or a two pet rule, for example, mm-hmm. the board could use rules and regulations to establish breed restrictions or a weight right. restriction, perhaps.
Right.
Because we start with the fact that we can regulate pets and now we can have reasonable rules. And the standard is, as long as it's not arbitrary and capricious, you know, lawyer words, then it's going to be enforceable. So the board just can't go crazy with the rules.
Right.
They have to have reasonable rules.
Yeah. Okay. You know, we get a lot of calls where homeowners are asking, why can't someone just knock on my door instead of, you know, getting this nasty, threatening, non-compliance letter in the mail? And, you know, sometimes it's from an attorney. So it just seems friendlier, you know, to me to do it that way. So what's your take on that?
Well, that's really dependent on the community. You know, imagine a 300 lot community.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to go riding around knocking on doors?
Well,
for
let's hope like hell we don't have 300 non-compliance issues. I mean, you're going to be very, very busy if that's the case, right?
Yeah, I hope to hell that you have 300 homes in non-compliance because I pay my mortgage for the year.
Exactly, with but one for, community.
For the property manager, it's not feasible. Okay, mm-hmm. that we're going to go walk around, knock on doors, and have the conversation.
No, but is there any liability on the part of the property manager?
Well, I would say, okay, it's in my opinion, it's more of a records issue. I mean, we want to have a written trail.
Trail, exactly.
Say,
because you can say, I don't know what you're talking about. No right. one knocked on my door and told me about my lawn.
Yeah, but a lot of times we want to just, I mean, most boards should go after the non-compliance issues just to get them in compliance. You know, we're not trying to catch them. We're not trying to, you know, fine them or start litigation against them. So, you know, I'm always inclined to some extent to knock on the door and say, hey, look, you got a problem with your grass. It needs to be cut. Can you get it cut for us?
And I think the board should do that. Okay. I mean, I don't think it's
neighbor to neighbor.
Yes. I mean, these are the neighbors. These are folks that you live next door to. So if the board feels like they want to be neighborly and go knock on the door and say, hey, look, we've got some issues with the lot. fix these couple things for us so we don't have to send you the letter. The board can certainly do that.
Yeah.
The problem that you have is that, you know, that opens the door to that owner misrepresenting what that conversation actually was, so that when the legal process does start, they go and say, oh, no, you know, the president came by and told me my my fence looked great and keep going. It's beautiful. And now we have an issue of fact that may affect me if I have to go sue later.
Yeah. So there's pros and cons to that.
What about pickups and motorcycles? I mean, there's a lot of people that love their pickup, a lot of people that have motorcycles. But there's a lot of restrictions in the declarations, in these rules and regulations, where they're not permitted.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do you do when somebody's only form of transportation is a motorcycle? Do they got to, like, park it outside the gate and then walk?
Well, or inside the garage where it's not seen.
Well, yeah, but they got to still drive in and out. I mean, how does that work?
This is a perfect example of when a rule doesn't work for you anymore. It's time to change the rule. Mm-hmm. I have to take the side of the association because, you know, this is who I represent. And the law does support that position, even if we don't agree with it, okay? Mm-hmm. And you think motorcycles are the greatest thing ever, and they save on gas, and I'm all for the environment.
But you bought into that community with those restrictions.
That's exactly right. You bought in. You could have read the documents at closing. It says no motorcycles. And I'll tell you why that's important. Because once you've bought the unit in there and you have a motorcycle, and then they go to change later and say, we don't like motorcycles anymore, all they're doing at that point is kind of stemming the bleeding. Right. You're grandfathered. But when you buy in a community and they already have a restriction and you don't do your due diligence as an owner to see whether motorcycles or commercial vehicles or pickup trucks are allowed, it's on the owner.
Well, commercial vehicles are pretty obvious. I mean, pickup trucks, if there's no commercial verbiage on the truck itself, I guess would be, you know, okay, right?
Depends on how the provision is drafted. You know, this is the issue, too, is we're going on a case-by-case basis because no two communities have the exact same restrictions and documents. So it is so important to read those documents and see what you are actually having to abide by.
Okay. All right, Bobby, I think we have a couple callers on the line, do we not?
We do. First, we're going to go to Mary.
Mary, hi. You've reached the Ameritech Connection. Do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. I'm retired from up north, and I live in a condo. And just recently, I got a bill for $7,000 for a special assessment.
Wow.
And for a new roof. And they're saying that if I don't pay it, that they can take over my home. And, you know, I'm on a limited income. And, you know, what am I supposed to do? How can I pay for this roof? And the other thing is that, you know, every year I go to the meetings and they don't fully fund. And the vote is to always waive it. And now this is what we got into.
So I guess I take it you're the one that votes to fully fund as opposed to not fully fund, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, that could be frustrating. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, Mary, appreciate you calling in. And these are always the toughest situations, okay? And we're getting into issues with collections and budgeting and reserves. You know, what Mary brings up is what every community really has to be mindful of, because if we end up in this worst case scenario if you're not properly reserving for your things like roofs, you know, the paving, the painting of the buildings, things that you're mandated to do by statute, but yet there's a loophole in the statute. Statute says, okay, if you don't feel like funding this stuff, go take a vote of your owners and keep pushing it off, pushing it off, pushing it off. Well, what happens when you do that is you get hit all of a sudden with this enormous special assessment, stuff that, I mean, in theory, you should be expecting it because you know you're not funding your reserves. But when it actually hits, it is near impossible for some people to come up with $7,000. So, I mean, the bad news to Mary is that this is a legal process. They didn't do anything illegal. Was it fiscally irresponsible? Yes. Is it now going to affect owners on a real human level in their community? Yes. Can they kick her out of her house for not paying her special assessment? Yes. What Mary needs to do is propose some kind of reasonable payment plan to the board. I mean, the board should have been anticipating that some owners could have had a financial hardship, and I hope that the cash flow allows that they can have owners pay this off, you know, over years.
Yeah, that would be reasonable.
That's a best case scenario, Mary.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, wealthy people that, you know, not like me, that's on a fixed income. But, you know, I mean, every year, you know, you ask the question, well, you know, we need more money in roofs, and they're saying, well, we don't want the fees to go up. We don't want the fees to go up.
Yeah. Well, I suggest you get on the board,
yes,
Mary.
That's exactly what I was saying. You know, what happens in a situation like that, unfortunately, the best recourse you have is to change the mindset of that community.
Absolutely.
Change from up top. Mm-hmm. Get on the board and do something fiscally responsible for your community, and people will have to understand that the assessments are going to go up, but you have a financial obligation to do that.
Yeah. Well, Mary, I hope we've answered your questions, and thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, the answers really weren't good for me.
I'm sorry, Mary.
Yeah. I wish it could have been better.
I have to try to get on the board and see.
Yes. That's key
That would be your best recourse. Well, thank you so much,
Thanks
Mary.
Thanks for calling.
All right, folks.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Please keep listening. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Joe owns his own business and, like you, is bombarded with hundreds of insurance offers. Joe can't decide exactly what or how much coverage he needs. Joe called Aegis Insurance Group. Joe met with an Aegis business advisor, and together they designed an insurance program specifically for Joe's needs. If you're confused about your insurance needs, call Aegis Insurance Group. Aegis, insurance protection tailored for you. Call today. 1-855-227-0262.
Whether it's an act of nature or a burst pipe, a large loss can cause significant damage followed by an overwhelming process. Trinicon has the experience and expertise to provide a stress-free approach to restoring your community back to its pre-existing condition, allowing you to focus on other priorities. Our goal is to return you to the comfort of your home as quickly as possible while maintaining the highest standards of excellence. Trinicon is a licensed contractor, roofing contractor, and mold remediator. Call 1-888-521-5667. 1-888-521-5667 or visit us at TriniconLLC.com.
Don't stress it. Call Innovative Roofing. We handle all projects from minor repairs to re-roofing, as well as new installations. We pride ourselves for both quality and reliability, working hard to build lasting relationships with our clients. Innovative Roofing, building a reputation for being a company who makes a difference. Give us a call today, 813-909-0400. Again, that number is 813-909-0400.
Allegiance Development is a family-owned and operated business offering quality general contracting services in the greater Tampa Bay area. We offer a wide range of services including commercial and residential construction, permitting, community stormwater management and repair, asphalt paving and maintenance, concrete restoration, disaster recovery, and much more. Our commitment and dedication applies to all projects, large or small. We have the expertise to offer fast and affordable solutions for all of your general contracting needs. Feel free to contact us at 727-584-1370 or visit our website at allegiancedevelopment.us.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back, folks, to the Ameritech Connection. And for those of you just tuning in, our guest today is attorney Dan Greenberg, and we're talking all about the do's and the don'ts of a condo and HOA board of directors and what authority they really have.
Okay, Dan, as you know, pets are always a contentious issue. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to give you an example. My dog is on a diet. He's a little overweight. Okay, a couple pounds overweight. There's a 40-pound restriction. Can they actually make me get rid of my dog?
Yeah, I mean,
poor Fifi.
Force the diet restriction? I don't know.
I think overweight dog is my favorite terminology in everything that we do. And we're not referring to fat dogs, although some, I suppose. But it is very common for an association to have a pet weight limit. Okay. And it's not to say that that's necessarily unreasonable. I mean, especially with communities with a lot of elderly people or even young kids, it's understandable that they don't want a bunch of 100-pound dogs running around that could be knocking people over.
But do they have an argument to say, look, the breed is typically this amount of weight, but my dog is fat?
The owner does not have an argument. What the owner has is an exercise problem, overfeeding
problem.
Put
that dog on a treadmill.
The dog begs too much and is getting too many table scraps. But, yeah, look, pets are a hot-button topic in every community. I mean, you've got your diehard pet lovers, uh-huh. and they'll go to bat all day long mm-hmm. for the pets. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the, I guess we'll call them crotchety people who don't like the pets, and that's okay too. And
I take it you like pets, right?
I do. Oh, yeah. I'd say he's a fan.
I am. This is a never-ending debate, okay? And this gets back to what is actually in the documents and what if it reflects the actual sentiment of the community, okay? The real hot-button topic when we get into this is, of course, the emotional support pets. I get that question. If it's not once a week, it's never. Because when we have a no pet community, which is actually fairly common, we have the owners that have a disability. They come in, they present, you know, documentation, and they actually have a need for the pet. So those are the real controversial and contentious issues is when we have an expectation as owners that we are a pet-free community, and now we're going up against federal law which protects a person with a disability.
Absolutely. Well, that's a whole different argument. I mean, that's like, what's the difference between an emotional support animal versus a service animal? I mean, obviously, a service animal is definitely, you know, maybe a blind individual.
Mm-hmm. Well,
he's allowed to have that.
But not just physical, but, you know, mental impairment or disability. I mean, they're covered under the Fair Housing Act, right? I mean,
yes.
I mean, emotionally. I mean, Bobby could say, hey, I've got emotional issues. Yeah. And I want a dog and get away with it, right?
And Bobby may have emotional issues, in fact.
I just wanted the dog.
Well, and that's exactly the problem is that, you know, we know
that's
a lot
exactly
of these
right.
people
he just wanted the dog.
Just want the dog.
Right.
And for any of the, you know, boards out there listening, what's important for you all to understand is that this is not just a perfunctory situation where they tell you I'm disabled and I need my dog and that's the end of the story. The association is allowed to make a meaningful review of that request, and what that means is that you can ask that person to give us some medical documentation from a treating professional that will identify their disability.
Yeah, but you know as well as I do that, you know, if I went to the doctors and said, look, my wife just passed away, I need this animal, even though there's a no pet restriction, what do you think the doctor's going to do? He's going to write a little note saying, hey, he needs his dog for emotional support. Now I bring into the community and I get somebody like you as their attorney sending me a letter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really?
Well, at the end of the day, that's the doctor putting their professional reputation on the line. The doctor, just like me, has an ethical obligation to act within the law. So if a doctor is going to sign their name to a prescription to say this patient suffers from a disability, for example, a depression or an anxiety or something like that, then that doctor is potentially subject to challenge. And if it could be proven that they were just doing the person a favor and that the person is not disabled, I mean, that potentially could cost their license.
Yeah, but who's to say if, you know, in my scenario, who's to say that the individual's wife just passed away and I am emotionally distraught over this and therefore I do need the dog?
Yeah.
I mean, I know if I was a doctor, I would probably say, okay, you know.
But that emotional support animal is not a pet.
It is not a pet. It is an accommodation for their disability.
Right.
So this all gets down to
medical. This is not company because their wife is no longer.
So don't try this in your community, Bobby. You're not getting the dog. And I know where you live.
Too. Try maybe a cat.
A cat. I was just going to ask that.
Or a bird.
Now, I know we got some more callers on the line, right, Bobby?
Yes, we do. We have Jessica.
Hello, Jessica. Welcome to the Ameritech Connection. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hi. I want to sell my house, and I can't even post a for sale sign. How am I going to sell my house?
Oh, that's an interesting one. What do you think, Dan?
That happens.
That's common, too, huh?
Yeah, it kind of surprises me because in most of the declarations that I read, one for sale sign is typically the exception to a no sign policy. It is definitely very common for there to be a no sign policy because we don't necessarily want the place plastered in whatever cause, you know, you decide to promote that week. But to not have a for sale sign would be pretty uncommon. So I guess I would ask you to reread those documents pretty closely to make sure that the board is actually correct in what they're telling you, because most of the time you're going to have the ability to put one for sale sign on the property. And if it's not currently in the documents, it kind of gets back to where we started, which we want to allow this, but it says no signs. But what was the developer thinking? Everyone should be able to have a for sale sign. well, if it's a condo, maybe you can allow them to put it out in front of their unit on the common elements, because the board gets to make rules about the common elements. So maybe there's a workaround for you, but check those documents again, because I really would be surprised if you weren't allowed at least one for sale sign.
Yeah, well, yeah, in your window if it's a mobile home. The, you know, sure. Right, I've seen that.
Well, yeah, but some of these communities, especially these mobile home communities, mm-hmm. and I hate to say it, but top of the world, I mean, they do not allow for sale signs, okay. Period.
Then that's it. End of story. Right. You do not have a statutory or constitutional right to have a sign out, on your property. I mean, this is a perfect example of when the deed restrictions can abridge, free speech, because a sign is basically speech, right? Mm-hmm. But if the deed restriction says no signs, the courts are absolutely going to enforce no signs. This seems like a no-brainer. I'm on your side, Jessica, because we all should be able to advertise our property for sale. So this is a perfect example of when you go to the board to ask them to propose a change to those deed restrictions. And mm-hmm. I'm sure most of your fellow owners are going to agree that it's pretty reasonable to have one for sale sign on your property.
Even if it's according to their architectural standards.
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
But anyway.
All right, well. Well, hopefully, we've answered your question.
Yeah, thanks, Jess.
Good luck with the sale. It's a hot market. Get what you can.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Bobby, I think we have another caller on the line.
Yes, now we're going to go to Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne. This is Ameritech Connection. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
All right. Well, this is a weird one.
That's okay.
My... the condo board where I live is suing me for smoking in my own house.
Oh, you do need to give up smoking, though.
Yeah, okay. Well, with that said,
come on.
That does sound a little crazy. What do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, this is a real hot issue recently. You've got the Clean Indoor Clean Air Act out there that says that we can make rules about smoking on common elements, for example. We can certainly ban smoking in common areas.
Such as the clubhouse. But this is our own walkways.
But this is your own home, inside your own home.
My own home,
that's
yep.
Right. So what this boils down to is whether or not there was a smoking restriction in your declaration at the time that you moved in. So if same with the motorcycles, no different. So if there was a restriction that says no smoking in the units, this is a smoke-free facility, and you bought in under that, you cannot smoke in your unit. Period. Now, if this is something that was imposed after the fact, which I have seen groups actually amend the documents to try to go smoke-free, then it would not apply to an owner who was already there. I think they would be grandfathered in. The other issue, though, is the nuisance provision. When we talk smoking, a lot of times we're talking the nuisance provision. So the excessive smoking is now infiltrating to neighboring units.
Right, it starts encroaching all over the place.
Yes,
right.
And these non-smokers now start complaining to the board and saying, hey, I mean, I don't smoke. Why am I smelling smoke from my neighbor? Now, depending on what kind of smoke it is, you may want to go down, knock on the door, and join them. But, I mean, that's...
Yeah, right.
Wow, Dan. You go to college.
I mean, that's a cigar, good. A pipe, a vape. I don't know what you're talking about, Mike. The board only has so much rights.
It's only legal medicinally here in Florida, right?
Yeah, and not even smoke. But John Morgan's going to take care of that, hopefully.
Yeah, so another issue.
But within
another
your,
plug for Morgan and Morgan.
They're not a competitor. I can plug Morgan and Morgan. It's okay. But, again, go back to the declaration. I mean, they have to have some kind of basis for telling you that you can or can't smoke in the unit. So if it's in the declaration, then it comes down to, whether it was there when you bought or not. But, you could be out of luck. And frankly, I hope it's for your health.
I don't think there is anything stated in there. And, I've gotten many letters from the association saying the neighbors can smell it and stuff like that. But, I'll have to re-look through the declaration and all that other.
Well, maybe it's a good time for you to give it up. What do you think?
Yeah.
Start vaping.
Do you need a support animal?
Don't give her any good ideas. But you sound like a reasonable person, and the fact that you're saying that it's getting to be complaints from neighbors is, I think, where now it's getting ratcheted up, because you've got to understand that, and I presume then you live in a condominium or a townhouse, and when you have attached close quarters living, I mean, this is the crazy system that we signed up to live in, and we have to be mindful of our neighbors, and whether it's noise or odors.
Yeah, but here's here's my issue. You know, and listen, I'm not a smoker, and I don't advocate smoking in any way. But if they're smoking in the privacy of their own home, there's no neighbors that are next door complaining. Who cares?
Right. Well, then no one's going to know. I mean, at that point, but here we've been alerted to the fact that now it's
you know, you have one of those board members all the time that are nosy, that walk around and, you know, and maybe she's got her blinds open and, you know, she sees
That's who I have.
She sees somebody sees her, he or she, smoking in there, you know, relaxing in her house and says, oh.
Well, if there is an actual restriction that says no smoking in the units, then sometimes, you know, we do live in a don't get caught society. In many respects. So, you know, this comes into play with HOAs with backyard violations, right? So we've got a nice fenced in backyard. We think we can get away with anything back there. So we go and build the outdoor kitchen, or we put in the above ground pool or the trampoline. And like, that's great.
Well, the trampoline's a dead giveaway.
it's above the fence.
This kills single family homeowners, right? I mean, these are the folks that choose not to live in a condo. They're not living next door. They buy their little piece of land. They think that they're free and clear of like all restrictions, and here comes the HOA knocking on the door saying, don't do something in your backyard. They lose their minds. But this is perfect for this conversation, because I'm here to tell you that we absolutely can regulate what you do behind your fence in your backyard. Right. I mean, so either
so
don't get caught
I
or don't do it.
Swim naked?
I'll let Mike take that.
No, you cannot. You cannot swim naked in your backyard, all right? Anyways, well, listen, thank you so much for calling in, and I hope we answered your question. Give up the smoking.
I will,
All right.
All right, have a good evening.
You too, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick two-minute commercial break, and we're going to be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
When you need legal help, you want a lawyer you can trust, someone with experience, knowledge, wisdom, and compassion. At Pilk & Associates, we pride ourselves at providing you with the personal attention and consideration your legal issues deserve. We can help plan long-term goals for your family or your business and handle unexpected legal issues that arise suddenly. We're a full-service law firm with nearly three decades of legal experience. We are dedicated to serving your legal needs. Please call for a free consultation
at 813-759-3285 or feel free to email us at law@pilka.com. We look forward to serving your legal needs.
Sun Paints and Coatings is your hometown paint store, family owned and operated for over 40 years. Sun Paints has six locations throughout Hillsborough, Pinellas, and Pasco counties. Sun Paints and Coatings manufactures Daico brand paints in Tampa and is an authorized distributor of Benjamin Moore and PPG paints. Sun Paints and Coatings works closely with property management companies, HOAs, condo associations, and individual homeowners, helping ensure a great project. Trust the experts at Sun Paints and Coatings. Sun Paints is the best paint under the sun. Visit us at sunpaintsandcoatings.com.
Hey, Frank, thanks for inviting us to the pool party.
Hey!
What is that?
Oh, my pool? Yeah, I'm going for a natural Florida wildlife kind of thing.
Frank, no, man, you gotta call Gulfside Pools.
Daddy, watch me!
Jimmy, stop playing on that alligator.
Oh, it's not that bad.
Frank, it's bad. Gulfside does pool cleaning and repairs for commercial or residential. With over 50 years experience, they'll make your pool look, well, like a pool again. Call 813-626-3539. 813-626-3539. Or go to their website, gulfsidepools.com.
At Corliss Barfield, we spent decades representing some of the most powerful insurance companies in America. Now, we only represent individuals with troubled insurance claims or whose families have suffered as a result of personal injury. Battling insurance companies is our business. Look for our faces in front of juries all across America, not on cheesy billboards. Corliss Barfield Trial Group, where battling insurance companies is our business and business is good. Give us a call today.
877-517-5595 or visit us on the web at corlissbarfield.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Ameritech Connection. And for those of you just tuning in, our guest today is attorney Dan Greenberg. And we're talking about how much authority does a condo or HOA board of directors really have. So, Dan, here's a real hot button, occupancy. Are you going to tell me who's going to live in my house? And are you actually going to do a background check on my kid?
I mean,
does that happen?
I mean, come on. It's my kid.
It's my house. Well, I paid for this house, you know.
I did meet your son the other day.
Oh, okay.
And he is a good boy. I promise.
He looked like a good kid.
He is.
However,
they're still going to require me to do a background check on him.
Yes. So this one kills
shame,
people.
Shame.
Yeah, this is.
So, you know, we can't please everybody in a community. And sometimes the board's goal has to be, how do we please the most people? How do we keep the most people feeling safe? And occupancy issues are one of those ones where, you know, we need to do for the greater good. And basically what we can do is require background checks for tenants or even long-term occupants that are not the owner of the property if it's written into the deed restrictions. And the reason I think people really go nuts over this is because it is very difficult to tell a person you can't have your son come live with you when they're down on mm-hmm. their luck, or, you know, more likely they've been evicted from their last two places. They just got done serving their stint at Folsom.
That's right. Absolutely. They're on parole and they promise never to do it again, right?
Yeah. So you love them, but the other 100 people in your community don't know them from Adam and don't feel safe having the convicted felon in the community. Now, one thing it's definitely important to understand is that we only have a limited ability to deny these folks, and it really does have to be for felony convictions, okay?
So what about sex offenders?
Sex offenders, felony convictions. You know, we're not going to use arrests because we all know anybody can get arrested for anything. And these days, I mean, we live in a crazy world where people get arrested for stuff maybe they didn't do. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to look at that. And the federal fair housing laws have told us don't look at arrests. But when a person has been convicted in a court of law for a felony that in the board's determination affects the health, safety, and welfare of the community. So, you know, obviously theft-related type things, violent crimes, maybe drug manufacturing and sale type crimes. These are things that if they're relevant and recent within the last 10 years or so, that a board absolutely has a legal ability to use to deny that person occupancy within the community.
Interesting. Bobby, do we have some more callers on the line?
Yes, we do. We're going to go to Steve now.
Hey, Steve, welcome to the Ameritech Connection. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thank you for calling.
Your thing. Hey, a few weeks ago, I got a letter from my HOA telling me to paint my chimney. So I picked up the phone, called my manager, said, you know, I don't have the money to paint my chimney right now. You know, I said, I just can't do it. You know, well, next thing I know, they hired somebody else to paint my chimney, and they sent me this huge bill. And now they're telling me that they can put a lien on my property if I don't pay up.
Well, can they
really do this?
Yeah, can they do that, Dan?
We go back to the documents that, Steve, what you're talking about basically is in a lot of HOAs, there will be a provision in your deed restrictions that says if you don't maintain your house to the community standard, and after the board has given you an opportunity to do it and sent you a couple of letters and given you a reasonable amount of time, that they are allowed to go onto your property and actually complete this maintenance for you and charge you for it. And beyond that, they actually could file a lien on your house for the cost of doing that maintenance. So, you know, in a situation like this, my best advice to you is to call the board or call the property manager, let them know what your situation is. There's obviously a reason why you can't get it done in the time frame that they're telling you. If it's a financial hardship and you need, you know, 60 days, 90 days or something to do it. Most boards I work with will be reasonable. And if an owner comes forward and actually tries to work with the board, they'll come up with a reasonable plan. And I know you see this all the time, but a lot of times the owners just sit there and get the letters and get angry and throw them in the garbage and say, why is this happening? Or they call radio shows. call the board.
Steve, that's not the case with you. Did you ignore the letters?
No, I just couldn't afford it right now.
Yeah, call the board and tell them. Hopefully these are reasonable people. I mean, we are neighbors at the end of the day, and if you try mm-hmm. to work with your neighbors and come forward with something reasonable, they should work with you. But, Steve, you also have to understand that the board has an interest in making sure the community looks good, because if the guy next door to you is trying to sell his house and the people that come look at the house, and no offense to you, but, I mean, if they look at your house or the house across the street and it's not looking great, then that may lower the property values for your neighbors.
Well, Steve, I hope we answered your question. I think you should pay the bill and paint your chimney next time.
Yeah, I guess my only other question is, could I have painted it myself, or do I have to hire a pro?
Well, you could have painted it yourself, I think, right? I mean, it's his house. Is it a single-family home?
Yes.
Yeah, so he could have painted it himself.
I think so.
Yeah. You think so?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you're the lawyer. I mean, I'm asking.
All I know is that when my association...
What have you been smoking over there?
Yeah, really. Are you on those vapors again, Dan?
All right.
Okay, guys. Right, next time I get a letter, I'm going to go buy a bucket of paint.
All right. Yeah, you do that.
Just don't throw it on the president, Steve.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Steve.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in.
All right, we just have a few more minutes. I think we have one more caller on the line, so let's take that.
Yes, we have Cindy.
Cindy, hi. Welcome to the Meritech Connection. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I live in a 55-plus community, and my daughter got evicted, and I was going to let her move in with me, and now my association's telling me that she can't move in.
Mm. Were you living there at the time that she was living with you?
She hasn't moved in yet.
Are you going to be living in the unit when she's there?
Yeah, I live in the unit, and I wanted to move her in with me, and they're saying that she can't move in.
Well, but how many days of the year do you live in the unit?
Are you there full time?
365.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Well, then what this comes down to is how your particular age restriction is drafted, because this is, again, it kind of varies from community to community. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer, because your provision could say no one under age 55 can live in your community. And what we're talking about here is the Housing for Older Persons Act, where, you know, this is an exemption to the normal fair housing protections that we would not be able to discriminate against someone on the basis of age. But for communities that jump through the proper hoops and are a 55-plus community, it very well may be that no one under age 55 can live in a unit. Now, a lot of them have a provision that says, minimum age would be 30 or 45. Some are even 18. So you need to look at your provision. And unfortunately, if it is one of those where they have to be 55, or if it's 30 or 40 and your daughter's, 22, she just can't live there legally.
Right.
Cindy, we're sorry, but hopefully we've answered your question.
Yeah, we're kind of running out of time, but...
Yes, you did. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Have
a great evening.
Okay.
Next week, folks, we have attorney Michael Guju as our guest, former commissioner of the Florida Real Estate Commission, and we're going to talk about the responsibility of licensed managers and what is their fiduciary obligation to their board of directors and homeowners, and some of the things that they might be doing that can either cause them to be reprimanded or even lose their license. That and much more next week. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Meritech Community Management is a local management company servicing the Tampa Bay area for over 20 years. We are proud of our company and continue to provide professional and courteous service to our clients. After 20 years, we still manage our very first community association. If you are in need of a top-notch community management team for your property, give us a call today, 727-726-8000. That's 727-726-8000. Or visit our website at ameritechcompanies.com.
Hey, you.
Who, me?
Not you, the hot one.
Hi, what can I do for you?
Aren't you that lady that's on that radio show called the Ameritech Connection?
Why, yes, I am. We're live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on TAN Talk Radio Network. Right, Mike?
That's right, Sharon. Live in a condo or homeowners association? Do you have issues? How about questions? We cover it all and more. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m.
What time again?
That's 5 p.m. every Thursday on TAN Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Well, that wraps up our show for today. Sharon and I both would like to thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, without you, Ameritech has no connection.
That's so true. And we also appreciate all the feedback and all the listeners that take the time to call in and ask the questions. So don't forget, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m., it's the Ameritech Connection on the TAN Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
And if you're looking for a good property management company, look no further. Give us a call at Ameritech. I promise you, you won't be sorry. We would greatly appreciate the opportunity to become your next property management company.
So don't forget, every Thursday between 5 and 6 p.m., it's the Ameritech Connection.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk again next week.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City Tampa Bay WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.